is when we come together, hope and joy will shine. Wishes need stars like you. Visit Make-A-Wish at wish.org.
The 13th annual WHFR Record Show is Saturday, October 15th from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Taking place in the Student and Culinary Arts Center on the campus of Henry Ford College, the WHFR Record Show is open to all. Don't miss your opportunity to browse thousands of vinyl records, CDs, collectibles, memorabilia, and more from dozens of sellers and vendors. Join us for the 13th annual WHFR Record Show here on HFC's campus, located at 5101 Evergreen Road in Dearborn, Michigan, on Saturday, October 15th. For more information, please visit us online at whfr.fm.
Broadcasting from the campus of Henry Ford College, this is WHFR Dearborn, listener-supported, non-commercial radio, featuring local and independent artists.
The sounds of creative improvised music, classic and new, can be heard on the Spirits Rejoice radio program every Tuesday, 6 until 10 p.m. right here, WHFR Dearborn.
This is World College Radio Day.
Hi, this is Julian Lennon, ambassador for World College Radio Day 2022.
Imagine all the people living a life in peace.
This year, the theme for our event is Voices for Peace. We hope you will support our efforts.
This is World College Radio Day.
Welcome to the 12th annual World College Radio Day. This year, our theme is Voices for Peace, as we highlight the efforts of student radio stations worldwide to promote peace for everyone. We are also delighted that our official ambassador this year is Julian Lennon. My name is Dr. Len O'Kelly, and I'm the station manager of WLSX and faculty advisor for WCKS Radio at Grand Valley State University in Allendale, Michigan, USA. We hope you will enjoy this special program, created especially for all participating stations to play on the air and share with their listeners. Welcome to our special World College Radio Day 2022 content.
World College Radio Day.
World College Radio Day.
Bonjour, vous écoutez le jour mondial des radios universitaires.
Estás escuchando el Día Mundial de la Radio Universitaria.
State ascoltando il World College Radio Day.
This is World College Radio Day.
Julian Lennon's sensitive and poetic vision of life courses through his acclaimed music, photography, and writing. In music, Lennon's melding of uplifting introspection and thoughtful social commentary with refined hooks has made for a compelling 7-album body of work. His debut, Volat, yielded 2 top 10 hits, the title track and Too Late for Goodbyes, and was nominated for a Grammy for Best New Artist. He went on to have number one singles on the U.S. album rock charts. Internationally, one of his most popular songs, Saltwater, charted successfully around the world, topping in Australia for 4 weeks and reaching number 6 in the U.K. In 2022, Lennon returns with a new album, Jude, which contains a personal and powerful array of songs that reflect relatable, universal themes. As the founder of the White Feather Foundation, Lennon has received numerous humanitarian awards, most recently the 2021 World Literacy Award for his significant contribution to literacy. Earlier this year, Lennon recorded a version of his father's song, Imagine, in support of Global Citizens Stand Up for Ukraine campaign. We are proud to share with you our exclusive interview with Julian Lennon, our official ambassador of World College Radio Day 2022, recorded by the College Radio Day USA Board.
Hello, my name is Nancy Bown. I'm from the College of New Jersey, 91.3 WTSR. right out of Trenton, New Jersey, pretty close to New York City. But first off, like, thank you so much for being our World College Radio Day ambassador and spending time with us today. And so, in general, what does college radio mean to you? Has it been a significant part of your career?
Well, I remember over the years that we've done live performances at various colleges around America. We've never done that in Europe, per se. It's just never been a thing. But obviously, college radio is a good way to get your message out and a good way to learn about what's going on in the world, whether it's locally or worldwide, of course. So, that's my experience. They've always been very interesting gigs because they're not like the usual, or even the interviews are not like the usual mainstream stuff that one deals with on a day-to-day basis. And I find that far more intriguing than the usual run-of-the-mill stuff.
Hello, my name is Claire Richardson. I am the former station manager for WRHO 89.7 FM at Hartford College. And a lot of us out there are wondering, can you tell us about your new album, Jude? Why is it called that? And what was the process of writing it like?
Oof, to summarize, that's a tough one. There are three reasons why the album is called Jude. One of them being that how this album came together was very different from most others. Normally, most others, you sit down to write, it's a process that you go through to write an album. This came together in a rather unusual way. I used to have a business manager based out of London, and we parted ways. And he sent, hey, I had a bunch of boxes in his basement that he sent over to me. And I had no idea what was in them. And apart from some financial stuff, there were like three or four boxes of tapes from pretty much every format from the 80s and before. There was the reel-to-reel tapes, Fostex tapes, 4-track or 8-track of Too Late for Goodbyes and Velox, so from the first album, etc. But there were cassettes and DAT tapes and Alesis tapes, and the list goes on. So I wanted to know what was on this stuff, and I had no idea if they were in fact damaged or not. So I sent them off to go through this process called baking, which is where they try and save whatever's on the tapes. And the tapes come back, and the first song I bring up was one called Every Little Moment from the album. And it sounded like I'd recorded it last week. So I was really shocked and surprised, because also I'd said to myself that the last album is probably the last album I'm ever going to do, because I've been so involved with my White Feather Foundation, photography, documentary work, children's books, the list goes on. So it was a process to go through these tapes and rejuvenate them by updating the production, putting real drummers on instead of drum machines and things like that. But not much else changed. And so that was a process that I started with Justin Clayton, who's been my oldest friend since I was 11 years old. We've been on world tours together. We've written together. And when the pandemic hit, he had to go back to England where he lives. And so I started twitching because he was better at searching through the older stuff than I was. So I was in the mode of kind of music, and I thought, well, let me see if I can get back in the studio and engineer myself, which is when the first track I did myself, produced and co-wrote, was Freedom. And so that set the tone between the work that we're doing for the idea that, okay, maybe this could be an EP, maybe it could be an album. In the end, the album had 10 tracks, but I kept seeing the bit superstitious. I kept seeing the number 11 everywhere, so I had to have a last song. Gaia came along. It was organic. Most of the work is organic that I do. All the songs on the album come from decades of work, really, from a lifetime of work, in fact, on and off. And there's lots more of that stuff in boxes for me to go through. But that's one reason, because it's a journey that I've been through musically. So that was one of the reasons. The other reason was that there was, a lot of Beatles things going on at the time. There was Get Back, which I thoroughly enjoyed. I saw a 100-minute version, which was much more condensed, a bit more focused, a bit more precise, which I loved. And I just saw Dad in a new light again, and it reminded me of what life with him was like before he walked out the door, when he was goofy, quick-witted, sarcastic, talented, moody, broody, you know, the list goes on of the memories that came out of that. And, of course, his interaction with the band. And also, I have a small collection of memorabilia from Dad initially and some of the Beatles stuff. And I bought the handwritten notes to Hey Jude, the arrangement of the song. And I'd been doing a couple of NFTs to raise money for the White Feather Foundation. And so that was in my head too. And also in 2020, originally my name until 2020 was John Lennon, John Charles Julian Lennon. And that kind of drove me crazy being the second John, because I'd always been known as Julian my whole life, from my mother, from my father, and the list goes on. And I was reaching a point of, you know, I guess growth and change, especially during the pandemic. And, you know, a lot of the songs are about looking in the mirror and saying, who am I? What am I doing? Am I happy? Am I sad? How do I find balance and peace in my life? And so it was a whole process I was going through. So I decided at that point in time that I wanted to be me finally. And so I decided by default to change my name to Julian. I still wanted to keep the initials because I like the cadence, the way it rolls. John Charles Julian Lennon. So I just switched the John and Julian. Julian Charles John Lennon, JCJL. And to finally become me after decades of being John. And also there was a lot of tension with the name John for me also, because I'd go through to airports and security and people would look at my passport and go, John Lennon, that's funny. Are you related? You know, there'd be all kinds of quip. But after 40 plus years, it was starting to drive me nuts. And I would get anxious about going through security and airports and this and that. And so when I changed it, it was like shedding of a skin. I finally felt I wanted to be me. And I was finally Julian. So that if you look at any paperwork or legal work regarding me now, it's just Julian. And most of my friends call me Jules. And Hey Jude was Hey Jules initially. And it was about taking ownership of that name and the heritage and the history that came with that. And just saying, yeah, I am Jules. Okay, now I think we've discussed pretty much everything on the planet to do with Dad and the Beatles. I'm going back to being me again, and I'm going back to all the other work that I love. But it also allowed me to come back and do music in a different way. I just felt that I wasn't really being, it's difficult to explain, but I didn't feel like I was being watched anymore. I felt a bit more fearless and carefree about doing the music. I wasn't worried about what anybody was going to say about it anymore. And I think part of that was down to the fact that I decided to take time out. I thought the last album was going to be the last album, but I wanted to find out if I was worthy and had a life outside music, that I could feel that I could do other things that I set my mind to, that I had passions about, that I loved. And all the other things that I mentioned before, I think, allowed me to lay down a foundation like nothing before. So, you know, regardless of music or what I've done or what my relationship is with that, I've proven initially to myself that I can be a good, if not great, photographer, a documentarian with Kiss the Ground and the children's books, New York Times bestseller. So I've shown my worth in this world on so many levels, and my purpose and my vision. I just want to bring a level of peace and balance and happiness to everyone's lives that I'm in touch with. And whatever medium I'm involved with, for me, that's a positive thing. And that's how I feel alive, too, in following that vein in my life. I mean, there's lots to be unhappy and sad about in this world. But, you know, we've all got to try slowly but surely, one by one, to make a difference. And the combination of that and the people with enough mind, body and soul and heart and energy, you know, we can make change. I've already proven that. I think many of us have proven that. And I think we just got to keep at it. So those are all the many reasons in part. And that was the summary, by the way, of why Jude is Jude and how it all kind of came together. So here we are. Things have been great. The response so far has been great. So I'm happy I did this.
The theme for this year's World College Radio Day is Voices for Peace. So what does peace mean to you, and how have you worked in your career and your life to advance it?
What does peace? Peace means everything to me. You know, I think without peace in our hearts, initially, we can't help other people. So I think, you know, I always thought the adage of save yourself first, take care of yourself first. I didn't really apply to my life previously, but I certainly have done in recent years, and especially since the pandemic. Peace of mind is one of the most important things in the world, to be able to move forward in helping other people. It's a no-brainer for me. As far as my involvement in trying to bring peace about, listen, I've written quite a few songs, Saltwater in particular, that is a humanitarian and environmental song. I push that song as much as I can every year, regardless of what I'm doing. And, the photography, through the White Feather Foundation, when we don't have a pandemic, and I can actually go out to see the projects that we're working on, whether that's helping out with clean water in Ethiopia or health and education in Kenya, whether it's protecting indigenous tribes and their culture and their land in South America and Australia, and through, of course, documentaries. Kiss the Ground became a platform that, which is about regenerative soil. This is something I'm planning on in the future. I just started a company called White Feather Films, and the idea, we've got about three films in the pipeline. It's about finding a way to start the conversation with people, because I've never been one of those people that like things being shoved down my throat. It's like with the children's books. I wanted to find a way to start the conversation about the world around us and for the minds of children, which is, I remember being sat with my mother or grandmother being cradled with a book, and you'd go on a journey. Mostly cartoons and this and that and the other back in the day. But I wanted to start that conversation when kids are reading with their parents or grandparents, and they're just going, well, why don't they have clean water? Well, why is there plastic in the sea? With the idea that this is going to go into the minds of the parents too, who have forgotten all about those issues. So again, and also the photography, it's about showing the situations and places that I find myself and trying to relay those to people who are interested. And I've done many exhibitions around the world now, initially with Leica, but one of the things that with photography and even with documentaries is that you can empathize with the people in the films or in the pictures. I think that's the best way to understand the situation. And I've had many letters and many emails, and this really touched me, where people have said, well, listen, I want to thank you, Jules, because and this never occurred to me before, we don't have the finances to travel to Kenya or do this or do that, or fly around the world. And, the other thing is we either don't have that, or we're immobilized, we can't, we're physically unable to do so, I can't leave the house. Being able to take people who are stuck in situations on a journey and allowing them to see what's going on with all the work that I do, it's magical for me. And that inspires me to be more of a storyteller, more of a messenger, which is what I guess I consider I am in many respects.
Hi, so my name's Olive Kyle Holtz. I'm up in Washington at the Evergreen State College.
Okay.
We have a lot of focus on humanitarian work here, and I loved hearing about all that you've done. So I was wondering how having a music career specifically has helped your humanitarian work.
Well, obviously, it's about, again, getting a message across, and again, not shoving it down people's throats. It's just opening that conversation up. And I think having done a song like Saltwater and a few other songs, environmentally orientated and humanitarian orientated songs, that it's about relaying situations again. It's about reminding people again. And I think if you're able to do that, not in a pop song, but anyway, Lucky Ones is about hope as well, the latest single, but it's about relaying how precious a situation we are in and how fragile we are. We all know that. And just reminding people. So I mean, I think I've been fortunate in that, you know, people have recognized that that's what the music is about. That's what many of the songs are about. And in fact, not just on environmental levels, about on mental aspects, mental health. And, you know, I've suffered greatly with anxiety and depression over the years. Really tough, you know. And especially when the pandemic came along, I just, you know, to understand, obviously, what we all went through. I mean, it, weirdly, you know, some people had a very, very tough time. Some people were in Costa Rica on holiday for 2 years. You know, go figure. But the only way I got through that was listening to music sometimes, half of the time, you know. And I tried meditation. Personally, it didn't quite click for me. But breathing was actually very, very important. That allowed me to refocus and recenter. And I think sometimes music can help you do that too. So I think music is very important, can be very important on so many levels. And again, I've written quite a few. The one thing I would say is I'm getting tired of writing environmental and humanitarian songs. We need to fix this stuff. I'll be polite about that. But yeah, I mean, that's at the end of the day, that's what we need to do.
Thanks, Julian, for doing this. Pete Green, WXAV in Chicago. Julian, what do you see as being the most important thing for you love to accomplish for the future?
Listen, I feel I've been pretty successful in promoting peace and trying to motivate people on through so many mediums. Again, I just started White Feather Films. So my ambition there is to do films that will also, hopefully, like Kiss the Ground, be able to build a platform that we can help with around the world. I mean, that's the objective here. And, I will still keep, whether I like it or not, I'll still keep moving forward with promoting environmental and humanitarian health in all aspects through all the other mediums that I do. Now that I'm aware how much of an impact all that stuff can be, my objective is to be more focused about doing that. Again, not shoving it down people's throats, but just gentle reminder, we've got to keep moving, we've got to keep changing, we've got to do better.
I think we can squeeze in one more question. Earlier this year, you recorded for the people of Ukraine, the Stand Up for Ukraine Global Citizens campaign, you recorded a version of your father's song, Imagine.
Yeah.
And also, just to let you know that really we are sort of adopting that song this year as our theme for Voices for Peace.
Yeah.
Was it a difficult decision and experience to record that song?
Oh, yeah. Well, listen, I never thought I'd perform that song. I never had any intention of, you know, recording any Beatles or any Dad's songs. I figure, why? You know, that's not my place. I'm not John number two. another reason why I changed my name. But listen, after the pandemic, I came over to America to start the process of trying to work again and try and do quite a few things. I was over for a charity called Music Cares, which looks after people in the industry that have fallen on hard times. Just before going to the event, my manager, Rebecca, said to me, listen, we've just had a call from Global Citizen. They're doing a campaign worldwide, global, that's about, standing up for Ukraine. It's a really, really important platform. And they're asking, you know, do you have something up your sleeve? And I thought about it for a few seconds, more than a few seconds, but I just said, the only thing that I think that I could do in a circumstance like this, whether I like it or not, that would have the most impact globally and bring awareness and attention to this situation, this plight, would be to sing Imagine. And Rebecca looked at me and I looked back and we didn't even have to say anything. But so I said, yeah, all right, I'll do it. The next thing was my heart. Yeah, I mean, you want to talk about anxiety? The idea of me singing Imagine, I'd never sung it before. So I thought it was worthy enough because, you know, also I'd been living in Europe. This had been going on next door to me pretty much. And especially after the pandemic and all the crap that's been going on around the world. So, you know, if there's any time, a better time than this, you know, this, it was here and now. I just felt that it felt like the right time and place to do this. And so I'd worked with Nuno Bettencourt on guitar before on another charity project during the pandemic. And I immediately thought, okay, let me see if he's available. We literally arrived in LA the next day. He'd never played the song on guitar. We went into his home studio. The moment I said that I'm going to do this, I thought it can't be like the original. It cannot. So I said, it's got to be on acoustic guitar. Otherwise, it'll be way too similar. This needs to be raw, no production. It's just me and the mic and the guitar. That's it. We sang it four times, did a little editing to do the best of the best. And, you know, I had goosebumps and I went, okay, listen, I've just been as truthful and as honest and emotional as I can doing this. That's all I can do. That's all I can do is lay it on the line. I was surprised and I thought, well, you know, how are the public going to take it? That was the other thing that I thought, oh, yeah, yeah, you know, anxiety flooded in again. I was so beyond surprised. I've had more respect from people having done that than I would have ever expected in my life. It's been amazing in that way. And I feel, you know, another shedding of the skin, so to speak. And then, of course, after we finished that, the next day was, well, you know, we need a video and it's going to be done by Friday. And I'm going, excuse me. So more panic attacks. And anyway, we managed to get it out. But the weird thing was on the Friday that this all came together for Stand Up to Ukraine and Imagine, the release was on a Friday, which was April the 8th, which was my birthday, which was also the release of the first single of the first album in 11 years. So talk about bonkers.
Julian, thank you on behalf of World College Radio Day for your time today and for joining us and for being our ambassador for this year's event. Thank you so much.
My absolute pleasure. My absolute pleasure. Thank you. Thank you.
One, two.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. No hell below us. Above us only sky. Imagine all the people living for today. Imagine there's no countries. It isn't hard to do. Nothing to kill or die for. And no religion too. Imagine all the people living a life in peace. You may say I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. I hope someday you'll join us and the world will be as one. Imagine no possessions. I wonder if you can. No need for greed or hunger. A brotherhood of man. Imagine all the people sharing all the world. You may say I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. I hope someday you'll join us, and the world will live as one.
We'll be right back with our special program for World College Radio Day 2022.
You're listening to World College Radio Day.
Hi, I'm Chris.
And I'm Johnny.
Hi, I'm Guy.
And I'm Will. We're from the band Coldplay, and we support College Radio Day.
Hey, this is Sean Lennon, and I support College Radio.
Estás escuchando el Día Mundial de la Radio Universitaria.
Hey, everybody, this is Grace Potter. Thank you for supporting World College Radio Day.
Salut, vous écoutez le jour mondial des radios universitaires.
Hi, this is Jeremiah Freight from Lumineers, and I support World College Radio Day.
Hi, I'm Alanis Morissette, and I support College Radio. But I won't do your homework. Please don't ask me.
And I love college.
This is World College Radio Day.
Hey, it's John Ondrasik from Five for Fighting. Happy College Radio Day.
Welcome back. This is World College Radio Day 2022. John Ondrasik, known by his stage name Five for Fighting, is an American singer-songwriter and pianist. He is best known for his piano-based soft rock ballads, such as the top 40 hit Superman, It's Not Easy, in 2001, 100 Years, in 2003, and The Riddle, in 2006. Ondrasik has recorded 6 studio albums, 1 EP, and several live albums as Five for Fighting. Ondrasik's song Superman was nominated for a Grammy in 2002. The singer has had songs featured in 350 films, TV shows, and advertisements. Earlier this year, Ondrasik recorded a song called Can One Man Save the World in support of the Ukrainian people and its leader, President Volodymyr Zelensky. Todd Richards, the award-winning radio host of Top 30 Market program Running Late at WBWC 88.3 FM, The Sting in Cleveland, talked with Ondrasik and found out more.
Can one man save the world?
What a trip to catch up with a man who's been providing a soundtrack for me and many others through some pretty amazing times and some pretty amazing stories. And that's the best way I want to put it, because I want to ask him about some of his inspirations. The man behind Five for Fighting is joining us right now, and he's already had quite the cool year, again, through his songwriting this year. John, thanks so much for the time and all the great music over the years.
Hey, Todd. Great to be with you.
You do seem to be able to hit a nerve to a lot of people for storytelling, especially in the wake of 9/11 with Superman. And 100 years, of course, is very, if I may be so bold, reflective on those things. I know you do other songs other than that, but the ones that seem to stick with people are these ones that are not only socially aware and sometimes, but obviously emotionally aware.
Well, I've been very blessed, as you mentioned, to have a couple songs that have stuck around for 20 years. I think there's no real rhyme or reason. I try to just kind of write honestly. And you'll notice a lot of these songs are kind of post-it notes to myself. 100 years, we all know the sentiment, live in the moment, recognize the moment. There you go. You know, something that is hard for me to do. And so I think writing, It's Not Easy to Meet Me, 100 years, you know, The Riddle, other songs, they really just talk about lives and us trying to do the best we can, knowing that we're not perfect and that at the end of the day, we're human. Folks resonate with that. And the nice thing about music, as you know, because you live it every day, is people take songs and apply them to their lives in ways that have meaning to them.
Right.
It may be totally different than where I wrote it, but how people take Superman or 100 years and use it at a wedding or a funeral or an anniversary or a graduation. You know, that's why I really kind of fell in love with music in the first place. And to have a couple of songs that do that for folks is pretty humbling. I'm very grateful.
Well, the song, you know, Can One Man Save a World came out in March, and then it evolved.
Yeah.
And as I mentioned before we got started, I really caught on to it the second version that came out, which was you actually recording with the Ukrainian orchestra in country, like at the battle zone. And I thought, that's insane. I mean, it's right. It is totally, totally shockingly wake up call kind of thing. You know, that's the only way I could say it. It was like a lightning strike that, you know, this is still going on, and you hear it every day, and it just becomes complacent with this, like, this is just one more headline we're used to hearing. You actually got to go there and talk to these people and share music together, which obviously is a unique gift in itself. But wow, can you please give me a little bit of background on how this whole thing came about?
Well, it's interesting because you mentioned that when the song first came out in the early days of the war, I wrote Can One Man Save the World very quickly. It was when Zelensky was being hunted by Russian assassins. You might remember he said, I may not be here tomorrow. And many of us were so inspired by his, I think, heroic actions at the outset of the war. You might remember, you know, America's first act when the war started was to offer him a plane ticket. And he said, send me some Stinger missiles, knowing very likely that not just he, but probably his wife and his children would be killed within days. And I think that really struck so many of us. We haven't seen that maybe since Churchill. I don't know. Yeah. And when I wrote the song initially, it was kind of a desperate act. I was inspired, but I was also in fear that this guy may not survive the day.
Right.
And I've never put out a song piano vocal in my life. But I literally wrote the song, recorded a take, and put it out within 36 hours, which, as you know, in this business is pretty stupid.
Yeah.
But I wanted the song out there. And it did its thing. It's resonated a little bit, but it did find its way into certain circles. And I was going on tour with my string quartet, and I wanted to play the song. So I was arranging strings for Come One Man Save the World. And I had a thought of maybe I should go to Poland. I'd seen the Polish orchestra doing some events. Poland has been so amazing in this war, taking millions of refugees, their prime minister, the first person to stand with Zelensky in Kyiv. So I reached out through some of the NGOs I've been working with to Poland, and they said, let me get back to you. And long story short, they called back and said, how would you like to go to Ukraine and play this video with the Ukrainian orchestra? And I was stunned. I didn't know what to say. I thought for a minute they might be joking, but it was too serious of a message and a moment. But long story short, they said, you know, the folks in the ministry appreciate it. And I thought it'd be a great way to put the spotlight back on Ukraine, as you said. And through a series of minor miracles, I was able to travel 48 hours, leaving my last gig in Indiana, you know, going to Amsterdam to Krakow, driving across the border, trying to find a car to Lviv, hopping on a train with a few American congressmen to Kyiv, and then finding out that we were able to record, basically due to Zelensky, at this bombed out airport with the symbol of Ukrainian independence behind us, the Maria, the largest cargo plane in the world that Putin destroyed at the beginning of the war. And we were so honored to do it because I think the Ukrainian people, the orchestra playing in front of this destroyed plane that Putin hoped would gut their will was very symbolic of the fortitude of the Ukrainian people. And as you said, to collaborate with them, to play with them, to have this collaboration between an American and the Ukrainians was incredibly humbling and powerful. And it's still in its kind of infancy, and it is making a difference and driving some donations to these NGOs, but more importantly, keeping the focus on Ukraine and their fight for freedom.
On a lighter note, since we're doing this in the shadow of College Radio Day, I thought I'd ask you, who's, as you've mentioned, been around for about 20 years now, still close enough in your career, you probably remember getting on College Radio and how important that might have been. Why don't you share that with me?
Some of my greatest experiences, you know, when I first started coming out with music, Superman wasn't my first single. It was a song called Easy Tonight, actually. And it was actually a rock song. I wrote it on guitar. And it's very, of course, like so many artists, it was a struggle. And where did I start? You know, college radio, AAA radio, people that would play music they liked, not that what they were told to play or not what the corporate radio told them to play. And back in the day, it was, you know, I just, my heart grows when I look at your image sitting in the station with the CDs behind you. It reminds me of the days where people running radio stations loved music and that radio stations were independent and they had people playing new artists. They weren't beholden to some of the corporate dictates of the folks we know who kind of dominate radio. And it's become so consolidated, radio, these days. It's just so disappointing. But where do new artists have their chance? It's college radio. It's AAA radio. And Easy Tonight was a number one song at these formats. Record company didn't care. But you know what it did? It allowed me to get to one more song. And that song was Superman. Without college radio, without AAA radio, we're not talking right now. And that's where musicians get their shot. And so I, you know, here we are 25 years later, and you know, I'm still grateful to folks like you, Todd, and your colleagues who introduce the world to new artists. That's the lifeblood of the music business. That's the lifeblood of our culture, is the next wave. And you guys are on the front lines of that. College Radio Day, thank you to all of your college, all of your colleagues at all the colleges that do that, that listen, that find the next thing. And maybe not everybody goes on to become national artists, but they get to hear their song on the radio. And that alone, for so many, is worth all the struggle that goes into doing what we do. So again, so you and all your colleagues, thank you. Happy College Radio Day. It's probably, in my mind, one of the least understood but most important formats that we have.
I just want to frame that right there.
All right, Todd.
Thanks so much, John. Appreciate it.
World College Radio Day.
World College Radio Day.
Hello to the world.
Καλημέρα σε όλους. Εκπέμπουμε ζωντανά από το ραδιοφωνικό σταθμό του Πανεπιστημίου Πατρών.
Από την Ελλάδα σε όλο τον κόσμο. Για το World College Radio Day.
Στον Οβίρου Δία Μουντιάλ της Ράδιος Ουνιβερσιτάριας.
Συνακούντε λέτε μάλλον όπως και μια ραδιοπαίδα. World College Radio Day.
You tuned in to World College Radio Day. A day where college radio stations across the globe unite to celebrate the most powerful medium.
Based in France, Sarah Rogest works alongside a local church to serve the North African and Turkish background population in Europe by offering tutoring and language classes. She also works to raise up transformational peacemakers in conflict regions of the world. Earlier this year, Rogest spent several days in Ukraine as an aid worker, bringing in critical aid and supplies to the people, and plans to return later this year. Founder of College Radio Day, Dr. Rob Quick, also a professor of communication at William Patterson University, talked to Rogest about her experience.
When did you realize that you wanted to get involved with what was going on in Ukraine?
Well, early on in the conflict, you know, we started hearing of a lot of refugees moving out of Ukraine and into neighboring countries. And France is a bit further away. It's not directly bordering Ukraine. But we kind of figured that it was coming at some point. And so immediately we started collecting and sending supplies. There's a member of our local community who has been for several years taking supplies to Croatia. And so he just kind of transferred a bit and started taking supplies to Moldova and Poland, and then eventually to Ukraine. And so he's takes two or three truckloads of things every month, sometimes more than a month. More than once a month. And so he was looking for people to help drive. And because my schedule is fairly flexible, if I plan a little bit ahead, I was able to go. And so it was just a quick trip in May, 4 days. And we drove like 3,000 kilometers. I don't even know how many miles that is. My conversions are terrible. But basically drove 9-10 hours a day to stop at three different places, one in Poland and two in Ukraine, to deliver supplies to contacts that he had there. So we were, from the beginning, looking to be involved.
When you arrived in Poland, was that the first time you saw the influx of refugees, the people leaving Ukraine trying to escape the war?
Yeah, we've had a few families, just like four or five families in our local neighborhood that had come from Ukraine at that point, but never in such numbers as we saw in Poland. We stopped at a church that had been, you know, it had been a huge church 40 years ago and kind of becoming smaller and smaller members wise. But then with this conflict, this huge building had been converted into housing 80 refugees. And so just like constantly people coming in and moving either further into Europe or back to Ukraine. And so we got to really see just how everyone's mobilizing all the resources that they had to house and, yeah, just care for people who had been fleeing from Ukraine. It was powerful.
And what were you taking in with you? Food and basic supplies like that?
blankets and water, mostly like flour and milk and canned foods, things like that.
And were those deliveries just for the people who were living in Western Ukraine, or did you get a sense that any of it would be distributed eastwards towards the war where it was happening?
No, most of the places that we stopped, actually everywhere we stopped, they would take a portion. We would unload the whole truck. They would put a portion aside for their local community, and then they started immediately boxing up the other supplies to send off to other connections further east in Ukraine. And so everything was being kind of distributed further in.
How were you received by the people of Ukraine that you met, and what were your impressions of them?
They were incredibly welcoming, and I think overly the gratitude that they had and the generosity that they showed, I think, was much more than we deserved. I think we received more in the hope that they were sharing. It was amazing to see how in Poland and in Ukraine, everyone gave everything they had to help the cause. The solidarity that was there and the willingness to help their neighbor, help their even somebody who's a connection of somebody who's neighbor, and, you know, these long, may not even know the person, but through some thin connection, willing to take them into their home and share everything that they had with them. And just everyone helping one another for this common good. I think it's been a while since I've seen such generosity and willingness to help your neighbor from the whole community. I didn't talk with anybody who was just, you know, angry about the refugees. A lot of people were overwhelmed, but nobody was frustrated. And I feel like in my daily life, I talk a lot with people who are frustrated over minor things, and there was none of that. It was all like, yes, this is hard, but it's worth it. And if I were in a worse situation, I would hope somebody was doing this for me. So everyone was willing to give whatever they had of extra. It was really encouraging.
And what did you think about Ukraine as a place to visit? What did you think of its culture?
It's probably the country where I have felt most at home in visiting. I mean, I've been in several countries in Europe and in Africa and South, like Central America and Turkey. I think just culturally, it's close, very close to my ancestors. And I mean, to the point that I kept turning around and thinking I recognized people, but everyone was very open and welcoming, and just, it was really like what I would imagine if my country, if my state where I grew up found itself in a war. Like, that's how I would hope that we would react, but it was very much like everyday life, but willing to work for something more because they had to, you know, like put into a situation that was very difficult, but making the best of it and doing all that they could to get through.
What were your thoughts when you got back from the trip, and what are your thoughts now?
Yeah, my immediate thoughts were very much along the line of, this is an issue that could happen anywhere. And I think sometimes before visiting, I had kind of the impression that, you know, this was a problem over there for those people, but it really drove home how a war like this could happen anywhere and how it's everyone's problem. It's not just something that's happening far away.
Do you have any plans to return to Ukraine? Will you be going back?
I'm hoping to in October. I think I'll be helping drive on that one. So I'm hopeful to be part of another trip and to hopefully get to talk with some more people there, because it's the sort of thing where you go in and we're taking this small amount of things, but I think more important is listening to stories and being willing to hear people so that they have a place to kind of offload some of what they've experienced and just know that they're not alone.
This is World College Radio Day.
Omar Essek is the Strategy Director, Content and Business Development at Red Tech News in Portugal. His remarkable story includes fighting for freedom as a student in South Africa and using the campus radio station in the struggle against apartheid. He has since helped build market-leading, multi-ethnic media in a post-apartheid South Africa, but has never forgotten his early career experiences. Nicholas Wilkerson from William Patterson University's Brave New Radio interviewed Essek to hear his remarkable story.
Talk about kind of what it was like, A, doing radio during the apartheid era and kind of growing up in that era where, you know, a lot of uncertainty and kind of limited resources and things like that. How were you able to kind of overcome those things?
Yeah. So obviously, yes, it was a very challenging time. So even as we as students were having a lot of fun with our radio station on campus, it was in an unusual time because while we were at university, when there were protests, and there were lots of them, you know, to try to win our freedom, to rally to free Nelson Mandela, that was always a rallying cry for everybody across the country. The worst of apartheid that we experienced was actually at university. Because what would happen is from time to time, we would have soldiers coming through to essentially intimidate students. And then the radio station changed from being a fun, entertaining thing, playing the latest music, the music that we all loved on campus, into a political tool to talk about the emergency. We were broadcasting and living at a time when there was a state of emergency in South Africa because the government of the president, the prime minister at the time, P.W. Botha, wanted to censor any news that that started to talk about things that were really happening in different parts of our country, the violence, the intimidation, the killings. None of that was, all of that was blocked out in newspapers at the time, and no radio station could broadcast it without being shut down or being intimidated. So we were living through a time where we were young people like young people everywhere. We really just want to have a good time and enjoy our studies and those sorts of things. But we were also facing a different threat that students in certain other parts of the world weren't facing, which is soldiers on our university campus coming in with Caspers, coming in with real ammunition, intimidating us, putting up barbed wire fences all over the place, bringing on, during the protest times, they would bring a certain type of vehicle where they would have a water cannon on it with a colored dye. So if you were part of the protesting group, they would be firing this so that it would stain your T-shirt so they can come and round you up afterward and beat you up. So those sorts of things were happening all the time.
Wow.
During that period. And so it was a combination. So the radio station ended up having a multiple purposes, one of which was, of course, just to entertain and have fun and play the latest music and keep everybody sort of connected in that way as a community. But the other purpose, very important purpose that it had, was during specific moments throughout our university year, our calendar year, there would be certain days that we would mark out, you know, obviously, you know, one of the most important being Youth Day, June 16th in South Africa, where we would, obviously, the station would turn into, from a music radio station, it would turn into a station that would teach you about that history. Mm-hmm. So all the presenters, we would play protest songs. Incidentally, for example, Stevie Wonder was banned on radio stations in South Africa at the time. Wow. Because of his outspokenness, and you know the songs he sang about freeing Zimbabwe and so on. We would play those songs. So we would find bootleg copies of it and play it on campus. But of course, the campus also had what we called special branch spies at the time. So you always knew that somebody was listening who would rat you out. And some of the people who were part of the Student Representative Council would get intimidated. I remember seeing a couple of the people, the students who were part of the leadership there, taken out of their offices by gunpoint, guns at their head, dragged to, taken away to police headquarters to be intimidated, beaten up, threatened, essentially to get people to comply. That was the way the weapons of the state worked, even in on a university campus like ours. So nothing was immune to what was going on around us. And obviously, most students weren't aware that this was happening because of all that censorship. But some did know. And those that did were the ones that that started to use, you know, the platform of the radio station to let others know that this was going on. And it was obviously a very difficult time because we were constantly being shut down as well.
Right. And it's truly amazing to be able to overcome all the adversity that you guys were going through at the time. You know, seeing your classmates getting taken out at gunpoint, different things like that, that had to, I'm sure, take a toll and kind of make you think. So kind of talk about personally for you, what drove you forward and kind of motivated you to continue, even seeing, you know, the government and things like that try to hold you back? What, for you personally, was it that helped you continue fighting the fight?
Yeah, I think the one fortunate thing for people like me was that we were growing up in the late 80s. So while there was still this rampant oppression and intimidation and the threat of violence hanging over you, we were also at the very edge, just as I was leaving university after my degree and my postgrad teaching diploma. As I was leaving university in 1988, I've been teaching for a year, maybe 2 years, and then the talk was all about the fact that Nelson Mandela would be freed. So had that not happened, I can tell you I would have had no career in radio.
Were you more prepared, do you think, because you had that kind of college radio background? So were you more prepared to kind of get into the business and things like that?
I was better prepared, without a doubt, because I knew I could do it. I mean, which is the thing that inspired me to go and try out at a professional radio station to look at it as a potential career. The fact that I worked on radio, college radio, campus radio at the time meant that I fell in love with it. I love the idea of, you know, just having a rapport with people, talking about music. Like most young people, just adored the music at the time.
Oh, yeah.
And so I wanted to do something associated with that. And so this was the opportunity. So no question about it. Had I not done that, I wouldn't have been bitten by the bug so strongly to be inspired to try out and create a different career from being a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
That's how eventually I started.
The theme for College Radio Day this year is Voices for Peace. And I think it's fitting that we're having this conversation now, you know, with everything going on in the world and kind of seeing the role that students have had in the past with, you know, you and your station during the apartheid movement and kind of what we're seeing now with students building up with different movements that we see around the world. So just a question for you. Do you feel that when it comes to Voices for Peace, that it starts with the youth and it starts with students and kind of continuing with that?
Without a doubt. The energy that students in my time had inspired me. I wasn't a leading light. I wasn't somebody who was at the front of that struggle. I wanted to be in radio. And just watching young people around me managing that battle, you know, being inspired to join them, being led by people who knew what was going on much more than I did. I was still sort of subject to all the censorship around me, but there were people in our group who knew the reality and the truth of what was happening at the time. Those voices and the energy of youth, wherever there have been changes in society, they've been led by people who are energized by a better society, by a vision of a better society that can create. And young people are perfectly placed to lead that. One of the things we look for at the place I now work, RedTech, we're always looking to hear the voices of young people and what they're doing in radio, what they're doing in audio on demand, podcasting. We're really interested in their stories. We want to feature those stories because our particular publication reaches over 20,000 radio and audio professionals around the world. We have big markets, obviously, in the US, UK, Canada, Australia, but also in India, in Malaysia, in Brazil, in Argentina. So young people who want to know about this business called radio, we do an inside podcasting feature where we feature podcasters who tell us how they got started, how they keep going. So there's lots of ways that if you want a career in this space, this is a great redtech.pro. That's redtech.pro. And you can learn about what's happening in the industry. It's a lovely way to get started.
Thank you so much for speaking with me. Have a great rest of your day.
Thank you for the invitation. Really appreciate it.
We thank you for listening to this special broadcast on college radio stations throughout the world. The College Radio Foundation is grateful for the following organizations who have generously donated to the College Radio Fund and are official supporters for this event. Button Punks, official gold supporter. College Broadcasters Incorporated. Emissions Analytics. Jaeger Lumber. Hindenburg Systems, Live 365, official gold supporter, RCS Sound Software, WinOMT Software, Spinitron, official gold supporter, UTA Radio. For more information about the College Radio Foundation and World College Radio Day, please visit collegeradio.org. My name is Len O'Kelly, and I have had the pleasure of narrating this special program for World College Radio Day 2022. The program was produced by Rob Quick. Special thanks go to Todd Richards and Mary Cipriani for their help in making this program. Long live college radio.
Hi, I'm Anderson Coleman, bringing you classic blues and R&B on 89.3 FM. Come and enjoy the renaissance of blues with a feeling Saturdays, 8 to 10 p.m. on WHFR. You will hear great artists from B.B. King to ZZ Hill. It's a feel-good thing.
Attention collectors, the 13th annual WHFR Record Show will take place Saturday, October 15th from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Don't miss this unique opportunity to connect with multiple local and national sellers featuring thousands of records, CDs, collectibles, and more, all under one roof. Early bird admission is from 9 to 10 a.m. and costs just a $10 donation per person. After that, a sliding scale of a $1 to $5 donation to WHFR will gain you access to all our vendors have to offer. We'll see you at the 13th Annual WHFR Record Show, Saturday, October 15th, on the campus of Henry Ford College.
Every 2 minutes, a woman in the U.S. is diagnosed with breast cancer. And in that split second, her life changes forever. The toll of breast cancer is great. The need to support those who are battling the disease today is even greater. We're fighting alongside patients because we know one moment can change a lifetime. United by hope, we can end breast cancer. Join our fight. Save lives.
Broadcasting from the campus of Henry Ford College, this is WHFR Dearborn, listener-supported, non-commercial radio featuring local and independent artists.
That's where my baby stays.